Good morning. I ask it every time. How are we all doing?
Awesome.
Great. Thanks for asking. Awesome. Who's loving fall so far? The rain was a little intense, but the colors are amazing this year and they're hanging out. The trees, right? The grass is changing a bit. It's just awesome. It's been a beautiful fall so far. I think, well, officially tomorrow, right? Or yesterday or today. I'm loving this stash. Got to respect a strong stash, man. You got to respect that. Distracted. You know, I was driving in here this morning. I don't think he's in here. That's probably better. But I saw this guy walking in, and I was like, when did a model start coming to Maranatha? And it was Eric McMahon. He looked so slick with his haircut and everything. I was like, man, there's just some good-looking guys and handsome people in this church, man. The power stash, it's like, gosh, we're blessed. You're blessed when you have a power stash, right? Okay, it's getting weird. So today, guys, I'm going to be touching on something that's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be interesting. I've never had this much time. I'll say approved time. I've definitely spoken this much before, but this is like approved time. So, and I'm very happy about that, because today is going to be an interesting day. We're going to be talking about humility. Who knows our culture? I'll start off with this. I was made aware recently that there was a man from Winnipeg who had a dream about Niverville. And he had a dream about Niverville. And he saw a giant serpent snaking through Niverville. And it was crushing houses and crushing homes, wherever it went. And he woke up and he felt that the dream symbolized divorces and the destruction of family units. In any sense, it represented division, it represented splitting, it represented crushing. And that was about 5 or 6 months ago. And that's a pretty real dream. That's pretty significant. One of the enemy's main tactics is division. It is to split, it is to separate, right? It's to divide and conquer. It's that age-old adage of separating people, because as one we are strong, divided we are weak. The devil knows that. The enemy knows that. Sin knows that. It prays at the door, and it's going to try and break in. It wants to break up marriages. It wants to break up communities. It wants to break up churches. It wants to break up cultures, right? Big picture, looking at Canada today, we are getting pretty divided. If you pay attention to the media and you pay attention to what's going on in politics, if you pay attention to what's going on in the world stage, Trudeau's done some interesting stuff recently that's been pushing a lot of that and really pressing some hot buttons. Churches in general, there's been a lot of, I'm not poking and I'm not blaming, okay? There's been a few church splits in this town. There's been a lot of disunity. There's been a lot of separation. There's been a lot of destruction because of that. There's been a lot of marriages in this town that have broken up. There's been a lot of churches that have broken up. There's culture clashes between people from Winnipeg coming in and people who have lived here a long time and people from other small towns who come here. And there's a pot store and there's weed and there's alcohol and Steinbeck. It's like there's a whole bunch of cultural things going on right now. And it's a little intense, right? Have you noticed that? This is so sad. Who's on Niverville 3.0? Little intense, okay? That's a Facebook group where, people comment from the town, and everybody, it's like the town square, essentially. Ideas and issues and stuff all come up, and it's like, you just eat your popcorn and you read, and it is like, you spend the evening doing this, you know? Today I'm going to talk about Philippians. Philippians, we'll get to it. But basically, I want to talk today, and it has to do with this stuff, members of one another. Boom, I didn't even know that was up there. Live in harmony with one another. That's essentially what we're going to be talking about today, okay? Excited? Woo! Let's do it. So the way my brain works is typically I like to have the big picture figured out. Like I'll have my main points and my main ideas. And then I just do filler work. And it all kind of works. With this message, I just did all the filler work. And then I kind of had to figure out how this all applies and works and fits together. And so I was very stressed out. I've been working on it all week. I got up this morning and was trying to, I just wanted to do the best I could to present these ideas in a way that's respectful and honorable and consistent. So we're going to be moving today, so just bear with me. I'm going to do my best to communicate clearly. But at the end of this message, I really want us to understand the true causes of division. And as Christians, how do we remedy a divided church, a divided culture, a divided marriage, a divided people? Okay? Got it? The book of Philippians talks a great deal about humility and unity. The issue Paul was addressing was unity, meaning there was division. Much like our society, Philippi was diverse in ethnicity, creed, and class. We can only assume what the division in the church was, but based on the culture and other books in the Bible, we have seen division caused by ethnicity and class before. So Paul writes this letter to the Philippians, and he loves them. They're awesome. They seem like a pretty healthy church, but there's some divisions taking place within that church. Paul talks about being humble and submitting to one another. We're going to get into that. But based on what we see Paul writing and some of the other books in the Bible and the type of city Philippi was, we can assume some of the issues, which we're going to get into. But there's no denying that there are differences in humanity, okay? We would all agree with that. Dan and his family are from the land of the giants. And some of us aren't, okay? There's differences in height, there's differences in ability, there's differences in strength, there's differences in intellect, there's differences in leadership skills, there's differences in hospitality levels. It doesn't mean it's all static and fixed. You can learn, you can grow, you can get worse at. That happens sometimes too. People are tall, people are short, some are fast, some are slow. There are differences culturally, there are differences individually, there are differences in church culture, right? I've gone to churches where I'm like, this is awesome. They've got a good message, but I just don't really, the culture isn't my, how I would express myself. Not that I'm against what they're teaching, but you know, everything has a different flavor, and that's not bad, okay? There's a difference between division and being different. Because things are different does not necessarily mean they're divided, okay? It's important that we recognize that. I didn't marry a clone of myself for a very good reason. I married a woman who is shorter than me, who is more nurturing and has a whole bunch of things that I don't have. And she married me who's different and has a bunch of things she doesn't have. We are very different, but we're not divided. Okay? Because there's a lot of stuff going on in culture right now that's making it seem that if there's difference, it's because there's division, it's because something's unfair, it's because somebody wasn't being favored or treated poorly, just because there's difference. So I'm just going to say this, for instance, fire departments have a quota now that they have to hire a certain number of women. Right? Generally, there's a bunch of trades that are like that nowadays. They have to hire a certain amount of women because if there aren't women firefighters, it must be because they're being discriminated against. Not because men and women are just inherently different. And I'm not saying there aren't women who should be firefighters or shouldn't be firefighters. If you can do the job, do it. Right? I'm never going to play in the NFL. Okay, thank you. Am I being discriminated against, or is it because my structure and my body are different from what is typically an NFL player? If anybody could join the NFL and play, nobody would watch the NFL. Actually, maybe more people would watch the NFL. That would be pretty funny. There'd be a lot of concussions, even more than there are. But some people are great speakers, some are great administrators, some are incredibly hospitable, some are awesome writers. With all these different people, which each have an inherent beauty in itself, there's bound to be strife and disunity as a result. Who knows that God has given gifts? I'm not saying you can't be a good writer if you're a bad writer now. You can work at it. But some people just know how to express their heart on paper. I cannot draw. I cannot. Like, I try, and I'm like, okay, this is going well, and it looks like my kid drew it, you know? And my kid's a better drawer than me. Like, my wife, she can draw, she can sketch, she's just good at it. Not that if I didn't really try, but you know, we have these natural tendencies. Those are good things. How do we all, with our differences, operate together in unity and maintain unity through it all? This goes for culture, this goes for churches, this goes for marriage, this goes for businesses. Have you ever seen someone's ability and been jealous and envious and felt bad about yourself? Have you ever been jealous of somebody else's success? Right? Has somebody else's success, even though it had nothing to do with you or your situation, made you feel unsuccessful? Right? I'll tell you all right now, and I think you'd all agree, that's all flesh. That is all coveting the gift above the giver. That is selfishness. That is all root and manner of what essentially is sin comes from that place, okay? So I'm going to touch on a couple ways that society and the secular world, while its heart cry may be valid, its execution and how they try to get things done is invalid, okay? I think invalid. Some of this is my opinion. We're going to get into more scripture, but I'm just going to hit it. One way the world tries to deal with disunity is to force equality. Under the law, technically, we are all equal. You cannot be judged different in a court of law based on your skin color or gender. We have laws in place, right? To make sure everything's equal. Lady Justice is holding scales. She's blind. She can't see. She can't tell. She hears the facts and makes a judgment, right? We've set our culture up ideally to operate that way. Yet we see division. We see cultural division. We see political division. We see divide. And when I say division in this sense, I mean it's the type of division where it's like, it's hostile, it's disagreeable, it's hurt, it's unable to co-labor together with. It's united we stand, divided we fall kind of stuff. When I say division, that's what I mean. About cultural division or even within the church, within people groups, all these sort of things. That kind of division is what separates, what tears, what smashes things against each other and there's destruction. So like I was saying, division isn't necessarily bad. Noticing different traits or tendencies or traditions or preferences makes us unique. It doesn't necessarily mean we're divided in the sense of destruction. Right? We have division. We have differences. Differences, division. The same root word is divide. There's a difference. There's a division. There's a separation between two things, right? So the Bible talks about how God divided up the nations, and he draws their borders. So obviously God doesn't seem to mind dividing people up into nationalities and geographical locations, right? He made men and women. He didn't just make a whole bunch of men. He didn't just make a whole bunch of women. He made men and women who are different, who legitimately have different strengths and different weaknesses. Plain Jane simple, right? God obviously didn't have a problem with that. He didn't have a problem with someone's function and ability being different than somebody else's function and ability. Lots is being said about equality these days, and it really depends what you mean by the term equal. You ask the average person, what do you mean by equal? What does it look like when everybody's equal? Well, you're equal, right? It's hard to define equality without using the word equal. So I looked it up, and obviously, the state or quality of being equal. Thanks. A statement, usually an equation, that one thing equals another. Okay. I think this one nails it. The state of being equal. This is equality. The state of being equal. Identity in magnitude or dimensions, value, qualities, degree, etc. The state of being neither superior nor inferior, greater nor less, better nor worse, stronger nor weaker, etc. with regard to the thing or things being compared. That makes sense? I'll read that last part again. The state of being equal in identity, in magnitude or dimensions, in value, in qualities, in degree, the state of being either neither superior nor inferior, greater nor less, better nor worse, stronger nor weaker, with regard to the things that are being compared. So, I want you to notice something. If we start defining things by equality, equality immediately demands that two things are compared. Two things that are separate are judged. Then those judgments are used to compare them to another thing. right? If the richest guy in your town has three goats, what's equality look like for that town? Three goats each, right? But if you come to America and you own three houses, what's it, right? It's very relative. And I don't see the Bible taking us and telling us to compare. I don't see that. Anytime the Bible has brought up the issue of comparison, it's usually in a bad light. And we'll get into it. In order to compare two individuals, first we have to judge them. Then through judging them, we compare them and determine what equality would be. But God did not create every person equal in ability and function, correct? The Bible never says that all people are equal. Okay? I'm not saying that. The Bible's not saying that. Right? Never says that all people are equal. He created every person valuable and in his image. Very different than everyone being equal. Right? Because in our culture, typically, you and I will judge each other and compare each other based on our gifts. Based on what we do, based on what we offer, or what we cannot and can't do. I'll judge you based on your speaking ability. You'll judge me based on if I know how to build a house. I'll judge you based on how you led that group, and you'll judge me, right? It's all on these things that we do. It's on what we have and what we offer. It's not based on who God says you are. Typically, okay? These are generalities. I'm not saying this is everybody, but typically. When I said, how come we can all relate to being jealous of somebody else and their gift? How come we can all relate to feeling insecure about our own things, right? Because of something somebody else has. We can all relate to that. So I'm a daddy. I have three kids. And if I bought my kids these awesome gifts and I each gave them a gift, and they're all different because I know them and they're all different. And then I step back and my kids start comparing and fighting and feeling bad about the gifts that I gave them. That's kind of weird. See what I'm saying? That's kind of weird. Well, how come you didn't give me that? Look at what I did give you. Well, theirs is this and mine's that, and how come she has? And well, we start determining our value and our being and our significance based on the gift we have. But God has given gifts not so that you can judge others or judge yourself by that gift. He's given you a gift so that you can use that gift to serve others. Okay? Live in harmony. Your gift is not my gift. My gift is not your gift. And I bet you the reason you feel the way you do about whatever it is you're good at or you feel you're not good at is because of what other people have said, not because of what God has said. Our culture worships celebrity. It worships a whole bunch of crazy things. And we start determining success based on how rich you are or how many cars you drive or if you look like Justin Bieber or if you write all these things. Are you an amazing leader? Are you an amazing speaker? Are you amazing in these areas? And that's not bad to be in those things. But guess who's not being valued? We're not like, man, you're the best mom. Right? You never hear that on CNN. Mom of the Year award goes to, right? We have these weird agendas that we judge each other by. The gifts we have aren't meant to puff us up. They're not meant to make us feel better about ourselves. They're not meant to judge ourselves by our gifts. They're meant to use them and serve other people. So we're going to get into, if I have an eagle and a chicken and I judge their attributes and compare them, then determine that they must be equal, what will I do? I'll kill them both. I will mutate them and destroy them and twist them into these ugly little beings so that neither of them actually represents the former glory they had. The eagle can fly and is way up there in the sky and has amazing eyesight, but it can't lay eggs and feed nations. Chickens are like the staple food of a society that's being built. If there's chickens, there's food, right? Eagles can't say that. Is an eagle worthless because it can't lay eggs? Is a chicken worthless because it can't fly? No. They both have their purpose. They both have their gift. right? So do you see how if we start looking at humanity based on comparison and judgment and envy and pride, and we start comparing our gifts and our abilities and our functions, and then we start taking away, well, then everybody has to play in the NFL, right? Rather than honoring men who are huge and strong and have trained and are willing to smash each other. Go. That's great. That's awesome. That, go you, right? Do you. If we actually try to remove all our differences, or we start fighting over our differences and we try to make a level playing field, we're actually going to destroy the beauty and essence of what God created. You know, God could not possibly create the earth and have everything reflect every aspect of his glory. Do you know that the eagle represents a portion of God's glory, but not all of it? Do you know that a turtle represents a portion of God's glory, but not all of it? Do you know that you represent a portion and an expression of God's heart on the earth that's unique to you, but you don't express all of it? So don't hear me wrong. I'm not talking about human beings' essential value and worth, okay? I'm talking about what our hearts naturally do with abilities and functions. We compare, we judge, we want to exchange, we get jealous, when the gift is actually supposed to be used to serve each other, okay? So that the equality movement in our culture genuinely has been about leveling the playing field. Okay, everybody can do everything. Men are women. Women are men. Men can have babies now. No, they can't. I'm saying it, okay? Men can't be women, and women can't be men. That is not how you get the heart cry of what the equality stuff is desiring. And I think the heart cry of the equality movement, if you want to call it that, is, am I valuable? Am I significant? And what makes me so? Every human being is made in the image of God, correct? Every human being. Man, when I was in Africa, we went to this one tribe, and I think it was the Sand People. Not Sand People, Star Wars enthusiasts. Sand People. They're like this big. They're tiny. They're full-grown men are just like, they're like ripped and muscular, but they're like that tall. And then there's this other tribe. They're like average is 6'5". Those guys who can jump, like, really high, both made in the image of God. Completely different physical traits, completely different abilities, completely different expressions. Both made in the image of God. Right? The Bible tells us to show no partiality, correct? We treat everybody equal, right? So there's that kind of argument like, well, no, the Bible says show no partiality, like everybody's equal. Well, did you say that to your wife when you married her on your wedding day? You know, honey, there's nothing I particularly like about you. You just happened to be there. I'd have married anybody because I don't show partiality. Here's the ring, right? Do you not show partiality when you're hiring people for your business? You show partiality all the time. And that is not bad, okay? You want to show partiality when you're planning on marrying someone. You definitely want to show partiality. What the Bible's talking about when it mentions that is it's talking about how you treat and how you engage with people on a day-to-day basis. Do you not want, like, man, India has this class system that's intense. There's the untouchables and there's the hotshots, right? They'll, like, cross the street to not walk past an untouchable homeless person. That's showing partiality, right? When you invite people over, do you get the wealthy guy to sit at the front of the table and you put your poor friends at the back? That's showing partiality, okay? It's how we engage with people in our day-to-day lives. God made us in his image, but no man or woman could ever perfectly represent God in all his amazing beauty. It actually takes all of creation and all of humanity, all expressing themselves in individual ways, to even begin to capture the beauty of God. For instance, an orchestra. We have flutes, we have violins, we have tubas, we have trombones, we have clarinets, we have all these things, right? Each one sounds awesome on their own. They can do different things, there's different sounds, there's different pitches, there's different scales they can do, I guess. But when they work together, it's just like, whoa! There's like a harmony that comes from the unity of their differences that is greater than what they could possibly have achieved on their own. But the flute is not jealous of the trombone. And the trombone is not mad at the tuba. Each, in humility, knows its role, values the strengths and abilities of others, recognizes their own weaknesses and areas where they need to develop, but plays what they're strong at. Harmony is when things that are completely different come together and work together for the common good. I can reach the top shelf. My wife cannot. Harmony is me reaching a glass and giving it to her. Nigel's very good with finances and numbers. I am not. Harmony is when Nigel comes alongside me and I reach up and get her a glass of water while she crunches some numbers and helps me understand some things. It works very well. You see what I'm saying? Every man and woman has a right to live. All are equally valuable to God and are precious and made in His image and reflect different aspects of His nature. Harmony acknowledges people's differences and divisions, but chooses to come together to work for the common good rather than chastise each other for said differences. God wants us to walk in harmony with each other. This doesn't mean we're all equal in the sense of ability or function, because we're not. We're just not. But we are all equal in value. See, are you getting your value from the gift you have, or are you getting your value from the giver of the gift? Right? That's an important question to answer. Very important question to answer. Oh man. We'll get to it. I would suggest that most disunity in a group of people seems to be the result of jealousy, envy, or pride based on the function and ability of that individual, said individuals. Just to sum it up, Paul actually talks about this very thing in 1 Corinthians. For just as the body, 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12, for just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one spirit we were all baptized into one body. Jews or Greeks, different. Slaves or free, different. And all were made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, would that make it any less part of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But as it is, God has arranged the members of the body, each one of them as He chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. You know, if you cut off your big toe, your balance is done. Your big toe, the ugliest thing. You just go, and you're falling. You're going to have to get rehab and physio to learn how to walk again. Your big toe. And our unreasonable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. So we see God setting a standard of honor and happiness. Man, I've had so many times where somebody succeeded and I was like, you piece of garbage. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, of course. Wow. Great. Great. High five. Yeah. And I go home and I'm like, I suck. This is stupid. Of course they may, right? That's pathetic. That's weak. Why can't I just be like, yes, honor, way to go, win, you're doing great, I'm so happy for you. Man, could you use your gift to serve me so I can learn a little more? Right? But we get jealous and we get introspective and we get nasty and we get bitter and we get cruel and we get all these things. And that's not living in harmony. That's the way of the world. That's how the secular world does it. You need to stop that. You can't be so successful. We need to tear you down. Level playing field. Rather than honoring people for the gift that they have and being thankful that they're a part of the body, because goodness gracious, if that part wasn't there, we wouldn't be a body. In the world, we see hostile division based on ethnicity, on gender, on political affiliation, on religion, on nationality, on moral issues, on class, whether you're lower, middle, or upper class. The fight, there's fighting and there's anger and there's murder and there's strife. All manner of unrighteousness is expressed. Some are fighting for absolute equality in the sense that it denies and tries to wash away obvious individual talent and ability. Some are fighting for special treatment based on race, gender, religion, nationality, morality, etc. We have Antifa, we have Ku Klux Klan, we have Black Lives Matter, we have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have liberals, we have conservatives, we have men's rights groups, we have feminists, we have majority representatives, we have minority representatives, all crying and fighting and pointing fingers and blaming and being victim and victimizing others. Offense is currency. Being offended is virtuous. The more offended, the more just your cause must be. And I'm not saying that all these groups' concerns aren't valid, okay? I'm not saying that. Some of them definitely are. But fighting and complaining, comparing, doing all these things, pointing fingers and being victims is obviously not helping anyone. The West is very divided right now, culturally. There is a hint of a culture war happening at the moment, and it's happening online, and it's happening with thought, and it's happening with culture, and all these things are coming together and they're warring. There's infighting like crazy right now. I think it's called a soft war, technically, is what certain authors would say. God wants us to celebrate, honor, and serve others in our differences. The enemy wants us to compare, envy, and despise others in our differences. A nation's government can only do so much to give value to its people. A church community can only do so much to honor the gifts that their people have. Who's ever felt like they didn't get enough honor for what they've done here at this church? I won't ask you to raise your hand. I've been serving every Sunday for years and I've never gotten a plaque. I don't know, whatever you get. I'm not going to get into all the political and all the cultural and all the societal implications of why things are the way they are, or whether it's some sort of economic structure that's causing things, or what a bunch of groups of people did in the past. That's all crazy, crazy, crazy. I think that the original heart cry of what this infighting and all of this stuff represents is significant. And I think it's being handled very poorly. Because I don't think this comes down to your skin color, your gender, your height, your physical abilities, your attributes, what they did, what they didn't do, what you did, what you didn't do. I don't think it comes down to any of that. I think this honestly comes down, like I said before, to the question of where does my value come from and why am I significant? And whether we're letting other people answer that for us or not. And I'm not saying we don't fight for the rights of downtrodden, okay? Don't hear me wrong. There's obviously voices that, like the prophets of the Old Testament, that's all they did. Widows and orphans, right? We take care of that kind of people. But I'm not going to deal with the big societal stuff. I want to focus in on your heart, because this isn't something, I don't want you to take this and be like, it's those Republicans. I knew it! And use this as ammunition against somebody who has a differing opinion than you, okay? This is for you. It's for your heart. It's for what's going on inside of you. The Bible will always come back to deal with that. I don't believe a government structure or laws or regulations or even church rules, everybody's going to speak every Sunday. That'll be fair. That nobody will feel small. There's lots of stuff that's happened like that in churches in history and past like that are trying to mend this wound of whether or not people feel valuable, whether or not they feel significant, whether or not they feel accepted by the group. And that's not what Jesus talked about. So with 15 minutes left, we're going to get into Philippians. The Philippians. So that was set the stage, okay? It took me 40 minutes. The Philippians. Okay, they are much like us. They were a very prosperous city, particularly in gold. They were a city whose history is drenched in war and conquest. What nations isn't? Mostly Gentile people, although there were some Jews there. Interestingly enough, the city, although not originally a Roman city, was given special status as a Roman territory. This granted the citizens certain rights. They could buy land, they had tax exemptions, they were above non-citizens, the rule interacted with them differently. They were considered Romans. We have a city full of men and women. There were rich and poor people. There were Jews and Gentiles. There were citizens and non-citizens. There were Romans and Greeks. And the Philippians took their citizenship very seriously. It was a badge of honor. It would be like if we took a city from Mexico and we're like, hey, you guys are all right. We're going to give you guys all the rights Canadians have. And so this one city in Mexico gets all the rights that Canadians have. They share in all of the social benefits and stuff like that. That's basically what this is. And that town would be like, yes, yes. And they'd be like, we're Canadians. We're basically Canadians. You're not Canadian because you don't live here. Get out of here. We have these laws. No, you can't say that to me. Like, it would be ripe for division. It would be ripe for disunity. Never mind the nationalities and the religious differences and the rich and the poor. The fact that these people get rights that these people don't is pretty intense. They cared a lot about money. They cared a lot about Roman law. There were many religious beliefs and different systems. One particularly was Caesar worship. It would be like if they started worshiping Justin Trudeau because he gave them this awesome deal to this one city in Mexico. They're like, we are worshiping Caesar because we really like our citizenship. We really like where we're at. We really like this law. Caesar's awesome. And so the Christians would have been highly persecuted in that state, city state, because everybody was worshiping Caesar and Christians weren't allowed to anymore. The Philippian church, theologians agree, had a problem with unity. It's probably the big reason Paul wrote this letter. It was to address this controversy. He urges a few people in the book specifically to make peace with one another. Paul obviously cares for the Philippian church and has many good things to say about them. They are generous, they're long-suffering, they're very loyal. They're a very good church. However, disunity can take the best churches and it can just drive them apart. It can just rip them. Because it's fueled by flesh, because it's fueled by death, because it's fueled by sin. The wages of sin is death, right? That's why God doesn't want you to sin, because it'll breed death in your life somewhere eventually. It's not because it's just against the rules. Disunity from strife and envy and comparison will bring death to whatever, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your business, all these things, right? That's just what it does. Paul writes this book to tell them primarily of Christ's example, urging them to live lives imitating him. So when Paul addresses unity, he hits it with humility. When Paul addresses disunity, his answer is humility. Right? And this, I'll show you. Paul's primary answer and corrective stance on disunity is to point the Philippians to imitate Christ's humility. We want to walk in harmony, right? I'm not saying it's not hard. It's very hard to not be jealous of other people. It's very hard not to compare. It's very difficult. Especially when the world brings us up doing that. It's a very natural thing for us to do. And that's the kind of stuff that causes division, right? When we compare our gifts, when we compare our functions and abilities, when we can compare status and reputation and all these things, and we get jealous and we start feeling bad for ourselves, and all this stuff happens, right? Because the ultimate heart cry of our heart is, am I valuable and am I significant? Is that being answered by your gift and other people, or is it being answered by God? So Paul's primary corrective stance on disunity is to point the Philippians to imitate Christ's humility. Philippians 2, verse 1 to 11. So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. So this isn't something you have to scrounge up. Christ actually bought us a humble heart. Consider Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God was highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every other name. So we have this picture of Christ, the God-man, the creator, the birther, the force that created the universe. Jesus Christ comes. He's healing everybody. He's delivering everybody. He's planting truth bombs all over the place. Right? He's using his gifts to serve. He's not saying, yeah, I'm the king, come worship me, get down there. Right? He's got all these amazing abilities, but what he's done is he's not using those as a point of, this is why I'm important, because I healed a bunch of people. This is why I'm important, because I'm a great leader. This is why I'm important, because, no. His gifts were what he used to serve with. His value came because he was a son. Okay? His value came because he was a son. At Jesus' baptism, the dove comes down and God says, this is my son in whom I am well pleased. Jesus hadn't started his ministry yet. God's delighted in you because you're a son or daughter. And you're unique and you're his expression. If anybody could have been mad about not being treated fairly, it's Jesus. Obviously, I don't even have to go into detail. He healed everybody. He cleansed the lepers. He set captives free, and they killed him for it. And not once did Jesus step up and say, this isn't fair. How come they have, if you really knew what I was like, you'd put me in charge of the Pharisees. And if I had my way, I would call legions down and I'd smash you all. You don't even know. I'm this, or, oh man, you know, everybody seems to really like the lead Pharisee there. How come nobody's paying attention? Right? Like, we can't even imagine Jesus doing that. Because the source, his significance, his value isn't coming out of what he's doing. He's not comparing it to what other people are saying. He's not comparing how other people react to what he's doing. Jesus' value, Jesus' significance comes from his sonship being that of God's. Christ considers others, it's hard to even understand. Christ considered others of more significance than himself. And he wasn't like biting his lip and doing it, right? He probably actually did. So I'll read a couple things again. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by being obedient to the point of death. So Paul says to be humble like Christ to the Philippians who are having these divisive problems. Be humble. So what's humility? Is my question, right? What's humility? What does that look like? What does that look like for you as an individual to be humble? And I want to take away right away the idea that you're this sniveling weasel and that everyone's better than me and I'm just trying to do a good job. Like, that's not being humble. That's worm-mindedness. That's weak. Okay, Jesus was the most humble guy who ever lived, and he fashioned a whip and cleared out the temple. That's not very politically correct. Right? But he was humble. So maybe humble looks different than something that we, than what we've been told it is. And I would say that humility, ultimately, and it even says it. Therefore, 2 verse 8, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient. He humbled himself by becoming obedient. How do you humble yourself? By becoming obedient. What does being obedient mean? Obedient means you believe and you do and you trust what somebody else has said over and above what you think and what everybody else says. Humility is submitting to God. God, I don't feel clean, but you said I am. That's submission. Do you understand? Humility is submitting to what God says about you before what everybody else says about you and acting accordingly. Okay? Humility is recognizing your need for grace and mercy. Humility is submitting to God's thoughts and ways. Humility is being constantly reminded of our need for God's grace. So Jesus tells this story in Luke chapter 18, verse 9. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and one a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, comparison, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector, judgment. I fast twice a week, and I give tithes of all that I get. The gifts that he does, the things he's doing, right? But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you this, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. So we have this big picture idea of there's so much contention, there's so much division, there's so much strife in marriages, in churches, in the political arena, in the cultural arena, in the municipal arena, everywhere. There's all this culture, there's all this crazy clashing, and there's all this division. And if Paul was writing us a letter to our country, I think he'd basically say the same thing. And guys, it's very tempting to want to jump on these trolleys and go rah, rah, rah and start fighting the way the world's fighting to try and get equality. I'm not saying equality's bad, okay? I'm just saying there's a heart cry behind it that needs to be addressed. It's very easy. It's very easy to get pulled in. That's not fair. How come they have to, well, what about this? This oppressor's evil and all these things. Like, Paul didn't even talk about that. He didn't talk about who was right, who was wrong. He didn't talk about, well, this isn't fair. He said, be humble like Christ's humble. Here's how Christ was humble. He believed what God was saying. Because Paul is addressing the heart cry behind the injustice. If we're getting our value from people and what other people think about us, if we're getting our significance based on how you react or didn't react to my gifting, you're done. You're going to get jealous, there's going to be greed, there's going to be pride, there's going to be wrath, there's going to be all sorts of things. Paul is saying, look at Jesus. He got crucified, he got laid up, all he did was good things. Guys, you're going to be disappointed. People are always going to fail you if you're looking at them for your value. If you're looking to be fulfilled by how people react and how they come alongside you and how they encourage you and how, wow, you did such a good job, you're going to be disappointed all the time forever. Because you were never made to be fulfilled that way. You were made to use your gifts to serve other people and receive your value from God. Not to compare your gifts and lash others. There's a heart cry. Am I significant? I'm significant because God loves me. He thought of me before the foundation of the world. He planted me in my mother's womb in a special way. He formed me, and now I'm here, and I'm a special expression of His. I have certain gifts and abilities and the talents that you don't have, and you have certain ones that I don't have, and I'm going to use them to serve people and bring truth and bring creativity and bring fun and create environments of acceptance and build family and be loving, but I'm not going to let you determine whether I'm valuable or not based on how well or how poorly I do that. Because that's pride. And Dan said it at the beginning, that is worshiping the created things rather than the creator. Romans chapter 1. Right? You following? So when I step back and I see all this fighting and I see all this division, like, this works out in your marriage, man. This, you know, and when we first got married, me and Nigel fought like crazy, like cats and dogs, like crazy. Peter and Agnes know. We were living in their basement. (Clears throat) And I found out in my own heart that Nigel had this tremendous ability to wound me like nobody else could. And the reason for that, and you may be, well, she's your wife. Well, yeah, but I'm not loving her for my sake. I'm loving her for her sake. So, you know that adage that we always hurt the ones we love? It doesn't really play out well. The reason I was so hurt by Nigel was because as a man and as a husband, I put so much hope and trust in how she reacted to me that if I did something nice and she didn't react well, it just cut me. And then I would rise up in anger, in justice, because I felt like that's not fair. And then she'd feel like he's rising against me in anger and justice. Well, I'm just trying to, rah, right? When I actually took the responsibility of my value and my worth off of Nigel and I put it to God's hands. You know when you're with your spouse and it's just like, there can be times when you're just ripe for getting mad. You're just like right there. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's happened and it's like, oh, well, why don't you just help me clean the dishes tonight? And you're like, oh, I know what that means. Right? There's all this history that our heart comes along with because I'm putting my value and my worth on Nigel, who's an outsider. It's your wife or your husband, doesn't matter. That's never supposed to be answered by somebody else. And I said a whole bunch of stuff about weed and Black Lives Matter and cultural stuff and the government and Trudeau in Mexico. And I said all these crazy things, but guys, the heart cry. Why are we so offended? Why are we so cut? Why are we so needy? Why do I need praise? Why do I get dopamine releases when people like posts on Facebook? How come I have all this like mass insecurity? And then everyone's fighting and blaming. Does that not seem like a complete demonic strategy to you? Comparing and judging and, well, we should all be the same. Well, I'm not going to be paid by you. I shouldn't have to work my life off so you can sit at home. Well, this person, they're a racist. Oh my gosh. Ah. And it's like, it seems like we're fighting for something good, but all it's breeding is destruction. That seems like a demonic strategy to me. So how Paul deals with it, Paul says to the Philippians, look at Christ, you guys. Talk about someone who could have been mad. Have his same mind. Be of the same accord. Make sure the first things first. You're not looking to a government. You're not looking to a church program. You're not looking to a small group. You're not looking to any sort of organization to fix your problems or make sure everything's okay and everybody's equal and that nobody's offended. Paul says, humble yourself, believe what God says is true about you, because the actual problem is that we're trying to get everybody to agree with us so that we can feel okay. And that's never going to happen. Like, and I'm not saying everything's okay? Like what they're doing to Christians across the planet's horrible. The Corinthians and the Philippians had it way worse than you and I do, okay? True injustice. Persecution from the government in crazy ways. And I'm not saying any of that's okay. But the heart cry, the heart issue, the problem, the humanity's, what is up with me? How come it's like this? I want freedom. I want peace. How come you don't? We're comparing gifts. We're judging. We're putting people on pedestals. We're holding things up. Rather than using those gifts in harmony with our weaknesses and our strengths to work together for the common good and receiving our blessing as sons and daughters from the Father. To wrap it up. That makes sense? Okay, you were right. 12:05. Sometimes being humble and serving others means not holding back good from others. You know, I've been scared to say things sometimes because I didn't want to be controversial. I didn't want to be thought of as one of those guys. And I didn't want to be held accountable or judged. And I've held good things back from people. Being humble is believing what God says about me is true, that he's given me gifts to serve. And whether I get persecuted for serving or not is not my problem. And it's selfish of me and proud to not give what I've been given to you guys, in whatever sense that may be. Sometimes what we think is pride is actually confidence in God. What we think about as humility sometimes is actually shame. What we think is pride is actually active trust. What we think is humility is actually self-flagellation. this message isn't for somebody else. It's for you. Only you know the motivations of your heart. So that really says it all right there. Whew, oh boy. And I want to apologize if I've ever been jealous of you or have held back from you. Something you'll never know, but I know. But I just feel like I need to get that out. I want to say sorry if I've held back good from you out of fear. I want to apologize for not bringing the good I have and comparing and feeling less than and feeling ashamed. That's all pride. That's all selfishness. It's not love. It's not humility. And I mean, we've got a good family here, guys. We've got a really good family. I'm really thankful for all of you. I know we don't always agree on all things. But Christ is our center point. He is our banner. He's our beacon. He's what brings us all together. He's what unites us. That's the most important thing. And I want to help us keep that the most important thing. Thank you all so much for serving. I know the Sunday school people aren't here. Thankful for them. Thank you for being an amazing support to me and my family. And I love you guys. And this community means so much to me. So Jesus, thank you for today. God, I ask, Jesus, you said that we have that same mind, Lord, where we actually consider others better than ourselves, where we actually consider other people more significant, not in the sense that we're worthless and we're worms, God, but that we would use our gifts rather to compare and judge. We would use our gifts to serve, that we would overcome fear, that we would overcome shame. We would take on humility, Father, because we will be united one way or another. And we just believe it's through humility like the book of Philippians teaches us, God. So help us. Help us to believe you before we believe anybody else. And in doing so, be humble. In Jesus' name, amen.